On this fifth day of April in 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized, text number 8. Is it? 2:8. Nahi prapashyami mama panudyad. Yachokamuchoshanam indriyanam. Avapya bhuma vasapatnam riddham. Rajam suranam apichadipatyam. I can find no means to drive away this grief which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like that of the demigods in heaven. Purport. Although Arjuna was putting forward so many arguments based on knowledge of the principles of religion and moral codes, it appears that he was unable to solve his real problem without the help of the spiritual master, Lord Sri Krishna. He could understand that his so-called knowledge was useless in driving away his problems, which were drying up his whole existence. And it was impossible for him to solve such perplexities without the help of a spiritual master like Lord Krishna. Academic knowledge, scholarship, high position, etc., are all useless in solving the problems of life. Help can be given only by a spiritual master like Krishna. Therefore, the conclusion is that a spiritual master who is 100% Krishna conscious is the bona fide spiritual master, for he can solve the problems of life. Lord Chaitanya said that one who is a master in the science of Krishna consciousness, regardless of his social position, is the real spiritual master. Kiba vipra kiba nyasi shudra kene noi, jay Krishna tattva veta se guru hoy. It does not matter whether a person is a vipra, learned scholar in Vedic wisdom, or is born in a lower family, or is in the renounced order of life. If he is a master in the science of Krishna, he is the perfect and bona fide spiritual master. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 8.128. So, without being a master in the science of Krishna consciousness, no one is a bona fide spiritual master. It is also said in the Vedic literature, Shat karma nipano vipro mantra tantra visharadaha. Avaishnava guru nasyad, Vaishnava shopacho guruhu. A scholarly Brahman, expert in all subjects of Vedic knowledge, is unfit to become a spiritual master without being a Vaishnava, or expert in the science of Krishna consciousness. But a person born in a family of a lower caste can become a spiritual master if he is a Vaishnava or Krishna conscious, Padma Purana. The problems of material existence, birth, old age, disease, and death, cannot be counteracted by accumulation of wealth and economic development. In many parts of the world, there are states which are replete with all facilities of life, which are full of wealth and economically developed. Yet the problems of material existence are still present. They are seeking peace in different ways, but they can achieve real happiness only if they consult Krishna or the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which constitute the science of Krishna. Through the bona fide representative of Krishna, the man in Krishna consciousness. If economic development and material comforts could drive away one's lamentations for family, social, national, or international inebrieties, then Arjuna would not have said that even an unrivaled kingdom on earth or supremacy like that of the demigods and heavenly planets would be unable to drive away his lamentations. He sought, therefore, refuge in Krishna consciousness, and that is the right path for peace and harmony. Economic development or supremacy over the world can be finished at any moment by the cataclysms of material nature. Even elevation into a higher planetary situation, as men are now seeking on the moon planet, can also be finished at one stroke. The Bhagavad Gita confirms this. Chine punye marcha lokam vishanti. When the results of pious activities are finished, one falls down again from the peak of happiness to the lowest status of life. Many politicians of the world have fallen down in that way. Such downfalls only constitute more causes for lamentation. Therefore, if we want to curb lamentation for good, then we have to take shelter of Krishna, as Arjuna is seeking to do. So Arjuna asked Krishna to solve his problem definitely, and that is the way of Krishna consciousness. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam mena tasmai shri gurave namah. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, the Bhagavad Gita, which is the basic text for Krishna consciousness, Vaishnavism, aims to solve all the problems that we may have individually, collectively, internationally, universally. Generally speaking, in our lives, if people are not aware of such a spiritual science, they try to have stopgap solutions for problems. Material life is one set of problems after another. And if we are able to make some kind of material solution, even temporarily, we think that we're being successful in this life, and we get encouraged to go down that road. Most people, when they get into their adult life, they're mostly concerned with making enough money in order to support their family and themselves. They have plans for the future in terms of prosperity. In the hard struggle to do that, there are little areas where they try to become entertained or happy. And eke out some pleasure, and then it's back to the grind of trying to fend off the dangers and the difficulties of material life. The vast majority of people in the world are like that. In certain countries like America and Europe and other, you know, developed countries, there's a kind of an upper crust, you know, a few percentage of the population who are very wealthy, who don't have to worry about that. The hard struggle for existence, at least externally, but they have other problems. They have other worries, how to preserve their wealth, how to, you know, if you're very wealthy, then there's always the danger of kidnapping. You know, you have to have a large security. There's that worry. And there's always the health worry. And there's always adidaivic miseries. Some disaster could come. And it's just, no matter what situation you're in this world, you're going to be in this position of shoka. Shoka is the theme here, which is lamentation. And the very first instruction of Krishna in a couple of verses is that you're lamenting for what is not worthy to lament. The body relationships, everything based on the body. So Arjuna cannot see. He cannot see any path by which his lamentation, his anxiety can be relieved. Certainly a kingdom won't do it. He's saying that even if I get a kingdom on earth like the demigods or a heavenly planet, that's not going to help me. So he's come to this point of really throwing his hands up and surrendering to Krishna in the last verse. And he's admitted that he's bewildered. Dharma samudha cheta. He's bewildered in his mind about what is the right path to the ultimate good. So Srila Prabhupada, so much of his teaching and preaching in the West and around the world was simply getting people to ask the right questions, getting people to understand our ontological position. Remember, we talked about sambandha abhideya prayojana. So this sambandha stage, understanding who we are, what our position is in this material world, and who the Supreme is, that's the basic principle. So the first thing is to bring people to the point of where Arjuna is at. That really feeling that they're at the end of the rope, that they can't, you can't figure it out on your own. It's really an intellectual surrender that has to come first. At least one has to doubt that he can figure it out on his own, or in any other way by approaching someone who is advanced in spiritual knowledge, not just material knowledge, not just technical knowledge, not financial knowledge, or any other kind of department of material knowledge. None of them will really solve the ultimate problems of life, birth, old age, disease, and death. So Prabhupada again talks about the perplexities of life. And academic knowledge, scholarship, high position, they're useless. In fact, they're positively harmful because they give you the idea that now, you know, oh, I remember when I was a child, growing up, 8, 10, you know, we had this, my first introduction to the concept of an encyclopedia. And, of course, in those days, there was no, digitized encyclopedia. It was all books. So I was so happy. My mother bought me the World Book Encyclopedia, for me and my brother. And I had the impression, and this young, impression, that all the knowledge I needed to know in the world was there in those 12, 20 books that we got. So now I got it. All I have to do is read this, because I didn't read the whole thing through. But when I opened that book, I felt I was, this was it. This is a reservoir of all the knowledge that I'm going to need. It's an encyclopedia. That's what it means, man. So, but of course it wasn't. As you go on, there's this Encyclopedia Britannica. That's the grown-up's encyclopedia. That's a bigger encyclopedia, more. That's where the real knowledge is. So after a while, I realized, there's whole libraries of books and you can't really get through them. But that impetus, that instinct, if you will, to get to the source of the knowledge that's going to explain everything, where I don't have to, that this will really be the ultimate knowledge that I want to learn. That was it's a good instinct. And mostly that little instinct is doused and destroyed as you grow older. You realize that knowledge, too much knowledge, I just have to specialize in one little thing. I remember when I worked in a hospital, this was 38 years ago, and even then I would, sometimes on my break, I would wander into the little library they had there. And even then, there was a whole magazine just for the kidneys, or the whole magazine just for the stomach and the gastro and all this. And there's a whole like that. What to speak of now? Who was making the joke? One of the speakers, probably Badru Narayan, that the doctor of only the left eye, and the guy had a problem with his right eye. But I mean, this little slicing and dicing of knowledge. This actually brings us farther from the truth. Just consider what the Bhagavad Gita is. The Bhagavad Gita is it's known as the Gita Upanishad. It distills all the Upanishadic knowledge in the small package. I mean, the Bhagavad Gita itself is only 700 verses. You can read it every day, right, Kumari? She reads it every day, the whole thing, all the verses. So that's very, very admirable. But it's quite a distillation. The Bhagavatam is also the same thing. The Bhagavatam is sodom, sodom. It's the essence of the creme de la creme, the distilled cream of all of the Vedic knowledge that we need to know, and especially for this age. It embodies dharma and gyan, religion and not real knowledge for this age. It's like a sun shining on the benighted soul of this age. So we should be enthralled with this idea that this was the idea of the meeting of the sages at Naimisharanya. That they need, the Kali Yuga is coming. They can see with their spiritual vision that it's going to be very degraded. So where does that knowledge reside that can help this group that's going to be born, which are going to be short-lived, disturbed, misguided, lazy in the matter of spiritual life? So that's the Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavad Gita is like the introduction to the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam begins where the Bhagavad Gita leaves off. But this essential knowledge we're going to be introduced to, this is for everybody. The whole lesson on the soul, very concise, 20 verses. Who am I? That's the first, who am I? Why am I suffering? And how can I get out of it? And what's my ultimate goal of life? These are the questions that we should ask as human beings, and these are the questions that are answered by Krishna. Now, the qualification of the person to approach, this is very important. This is one verse that's often quoted, spoken by Lord Chaitanya to Ramananda Roy. Kiva vipra kiva nyasi shudakene no ye Krishna tattva veda se guru hoy. That it doesn't matter what the birth is, it matters what the qualification and what the knowledge is. And so one may be a Brahmin, one may be a sannyasi, or one may be a Shudra, lowborn, or even out of the Shudra. If one is conversant, fully conversant in truth with Krishna Tattva, with the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, one can be a spiritual master. And that's why this movement is going on. Srila Prabhupada, being fully conversant with the statements like this and statements in the Bhagavatam describing the powerful purification energy or strength of Krishna consciousness, knew for certain, he had great faith, that even the Westerners, who were completely outside the Vedic culture, had no idea of anything, they could be purified by the process of devotional service if they take it up sincerely and one day become spiritual masters on their own, whom others could approach and get knowledge from. Otherwise, the science as it is will be lost by the force of time, as Krishna says in the fourth chapter. So on that basis of verses like this, and also the next one from the Padma Puran, Shatkarmadipano Vipro, that a Brahmin may be very expert in these six activities of the Brahmin. Yajan Yajan, Patan Patan, Yajan Yajan, Dana Pratigraha. That he performs sacrifices and teaches others how to perform sacrifices. He recites the Vedas and he teaches others. You know, he learns and he teaches. And he accepts charity and gives charity. You know, the Brahmins, they accept all kinds of charity, but then they give it all away at the end of the day to worthy, and they live very simply. You know, they're meant to live austerely. So, but even if you're an expert in those, but you're not a Vaishnav, an expert in also the mantras and the tantras, you can chant all kinds. But a Vaishnava can't be a guru. But even if you're a dog eater, born as a dog eater, but don't have those qualities now, but you're a Vaishnava, then you can become a guru. So see, the whole quality is your character, your knowledge, your behavior, and your willingness to teach. That's what makes a Vaishnava. Prabhupada reiterates, you know, once again, what are the real problems? Birth, old age, disease, and death. Cannot be solved in any relative way. Economic development, nothing will solve it. Only the knowledge of the Gita and Bhagavatam received through a bona fide representative can solve those problems. Okay. Any questions on this verse? Okay, let's go on. Now we're about to embark on Krishna's instructions in a couple of verses. Sanjaya Vacha Evam Yukva Rishikesham Gudakesha Parantapaha Nayotsya Iti Govindam Uktva Tushnim Babuvaha. Sanjay said, having spoken thus, Arjun, chastiser of enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight, and fell silent. Purport. Dhritarashtra must have been very glad to understand that Arjun was not going to fight and was instead leaving the battlefield for the begging profession. But Sanjay disappointed him again in relating that Arjun was competent to kill his enemies, Parantapaha. Although Arjun was, for the time being, overwhelmed with false grief due to family affection, he surrendered unto Krishna, the Supreme Spiritual Master, as a disciple. This indicated that he would soon be free from the false lamentation resulting from family affection and would be enlightened with perfect knowledge of self-realization, or Krishna consciousness, and would then surely fight. Thus, Dhritarashtra's joy would be frustrated, since Arjun would be enlightened by Krishna and would fight to the end. So one note on this theme here of shoka, or lamentation, right? This is what the Shudras do. The very word Shudra means to always be crying and lamentation. And if you realize here that the whole instruction begins, looking ahead one verse, Ashochanam Ashochastram, you're lamenting for what is not lamentable. And the instruction ends with lamentation. Sarva Dharma Paricchaya, Mami Kamsharanam Bhaja, Aham Tvam Savapapebhyo, Moksha Yishyami, Ma Shuchaha. The word shuchaha is the same root. Don't lament. Because lamentation is like a paralyzing thing. One is always lamenting for, you know, what he might have done, what might have been. You know, if only I did this, if only I didn't do that, I lost this. You know, even you know, like gamblers, right? Gambling is one of the four eggs. Because it always produces lamentation. Even if you win, why didn't I bet more? You know? And if you lose, oh, why did I bet? Right? So it's a no-win situation. It's sure to bring lamentation. Right? So, and there's a million things to lament for, you know? So the very first instruction is don't lament. And you'll find throughout the second chapter, there's so much of that. I was studying with my friend Bhakta Tim here, Prajahatiya.com and sarvampartamanogatam. You know, to be free from material desire, be satisfied within duke shonod vignamana sukeshu bhagataswa. Become dhira, vitaraga bayakrota, and yak sarvatanabhisnehas. You know, generally means don't get swayed, don't get thrown off your game, you know, with lamentation by the miseries of this world or by the allurements for happiness. That's also, it makes you unsteady. So the first thing one has to become, you realize that as you read the Bhagavad Gita through, the very first instruction, you've got to be tolerant. You've got to be dhira. Otherwise, you can't even make step one. And take step one. And so Arjuna is anything but that. He's paralyzed with lamentation. On one side, he's lamenting that he's going to have to kill, and on the other side, he's lamenting that, you know, he's not following Krishna's order. So he's paralyzed by lamentation, you know, as he described in the couple of verses back. So coming out of that and being, steady in Krishna consciousness and finding another level to, you know, the transcendental level, you know, to be on, that one can, you know, negotiate the waves of this material world is a very important first step in any kind of yoga practice. Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
A couple of verses ago, Arjuna says, you know, now I am your disciple, a soul surrendered unto you for the instruction. But then in this verse, he says...
You mean the previous verse, text 8?
Text 7.
Well, text 7 he surrendered, and text 8 was his last statement, so he must be referring to text 8, right?
But in this verse, having just said that he doesn't know what the correct thing to do is, and he's willing to listen.
Oh, now he says, "Don't, I won't fight."
And now he says that he's not going to fight. So, what's up with that?
Well, the point is that, you know, even though he surrendered, he's still declaring where he's at the moment. In other words, he's not going to fight, you know, unless Krishna convinces him. He's in a very confused state here. He doesn't know, he doesn't see, he can't see. But he has surrendered, and it's like that. You know, you may surrender to a guru, but then you meet a spiritual crisis. Says, I can't do this, I won't do this, but Guru Dev, please instruct me, please inspire me, you know. In other words, it's good that he's revealing this. You know, because otherwise if he didn't, then the Gita wouldn't be spoken. Right? He said, now I'm surrendered to you. Okay, let's go and fight. And we end in chapter, 2, text 7. So, Krishna, he inspired him to say, no, I'm not going to fight. Even though I'm surrendered, now please, you know, fill me with knowledge. What were you going to say?
If lamentation is bad and paralyzing, then Narottam Das Thakur, that was his whole movie. What are the characteristics of... How do we know when someone is lamenting in Krishna consciousness and when it's lamentation in Maya?
Okay, that's a good question. In other words, there is a kind of lamentation that we see, you know, in Narottam Das, what to speak, in Narottam Das Thakur, in Lord Chaitanya himself, who was, you know, the ideal devotee. He was lamenting like anything in Puri. You know, where is Krishna? What about Madhavendra Puri? Right? I mean, it's interesting you asked the question. Madhavendra Puri, and when he was passing away, he chanted his verse, which is a verse of lamentation. I deena da yahada nata he matoda nata kadava lokase vidyam tada loka katadam dayata brahma dikinkarom yaham. Katadam is lamenting. So he's saying, I deena da yahada, oh, my Lord, you who are most merciful, whose heart is melting with mercy for the most wretched. Dina Dayadra, O Master, not O Master of Mathura. So that indicates Radharani's in Vrindavan and Krishna went to Mathura. Maturanata, he's in Mad Latin. Kadava Lokise, when will I see you again? Due to my not seeing you, Vidyam Chodaloka Katada, my heart is very unsteady and disturbed. Oh my beloved Lord, what shall I do now? Where shall I go? This is a lamentation. So he's on his, quote, deathbed, and Ishwarpuri was tending to him, but Ramchandra Puri was thinking, why are you lamenting? He's instructing his own spiritual master. You should be situated in Brahman, you know, Brahman, Brahmabhuta, beyond lamentation. So the point is that in a preliminary stage, in other words, as you progress in spiritual life, you meant to come to that point of sama dukkha sama kritva, of being beyond material happiness and distress. You know, getting to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Brahma-Bhuta, prasannātma, na shochati, na kanchati. The same word, shochati. So one is Brahma-Bhuta, means he's transcendental to the modes of nature. Nature is naturally joyful, not lamenting for anything, not hankering for anything material. Seeing everyone equally as spirit soul, samaksara-vesha-bhuteshu. And then mad-bhaktim labhade-param. One can attain real devotional service to me. Now, in devotional service, on that transcendental platform, if one is very advanced, then one comes to the stage, a higher stage of the higher rasas, such as the conjugal ras, and in that stage, there are various tastes which are, churned up and increased by meeting and separation. So when the queens in Dwarka, they don't have they do have separation, you know, but not really. Krishna's always with them, but to taste that separation mood, they think that he may leave, and so they become in anxiety, and they have a whole bunch of songs like that. Oh, you know, where is it? Have you seen Krishna? They address the mountain, they address the ocean like that. But the gopis, they really have that, you know, separation during the day. Krishna's away. You know, and then when Akura takes him, oh, it's like the end of the world, and then they spend their whole life lamenting. But that lamentation is the highest pleasure, whereas material lamentation is nothing but misery, because the object really isn't there. But with Krishna, because he's absolute, he responds to the intensity of your emotion and your meditation on him. So because there was samboga, because there was meeting, you know. Then they have the firm impression of Krishna, and they're just always thinking of him and speaking about him, and longing for his presence, and that intensity means that they're the highest devotees. So that kind of lamentation, which is the same with Narottam Das Thakur, is the highest stage of devotional service. It's nothing like Arjuna's lamentation. Arjuna's lamentation, he's covered by Krishna, is material lamentation. So, and Narottam, you may be referring to some songs where he takes the role of a conditioned soul. He says, oh, I spent my whole life uselessly, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know. Anadi kadama pole, bhavarnavajale. You know, I've been in this ocean of material life, suffering my unlimited karma from time immemorial, and I never worshipped Radha and Krishna, and I spent my life uselessly. But you'll notice that the song always ends. It never ends on a note of despair. The end of the song is always, therefore I'm completely helpless. Please save me, O Lord. You see, it's not a material song of like I like to refer. Forgive me to Shakespeare's sonnets. I did that the other day. You know, it's all blue. You know, oh, now old age has come. Where are you, my love? I knew you in the youth. You know, the summer is over. The winter is here. All right, where's the positive? It's not. It's material, you know, separation. But the spiritual song always ends with, therefore, my Lord, I have no shelter but you. Please save me. Please come and save me. You see? So it's a means by which one can churn up and increase one's longing for Krishna. We can entrain. You know, remember that I introduced this concept of entrainment. I looked it up. It's not even a word, but in the dictionary. But you can understand what it means. It means like to get on the train. You know, to hook up to the emotion that's being expressed and the ideas that are being expressed by these great devotees. But it's association. It's nothing but association. You come into the association of great devotees, either personally or through their words, which is the most important. And if you meditate on them, you repeat them, you utter them to the deities, you share them with devotees, you glorify the Lord together, then you can experience some of that. You know, that mood of whatever mood they're expressing there. So, these are great gifts. Narottam Das's songs and Bhaktivinoda's songs and the Bhagavatam itself. So that's not the kind of, like, we have to make distinction. This is sometimes a big mistake. I like to tell the story, you know, my little story. The classic, you know, how can you worship Krishna as God You know, he's supposed to be so moral, and he danced with other men's wives in the middle of the night. You know, I was standing waiting for to get my luggage at a carousel in an airport, and I'm dressed like this, and a guy comes up to me and says, "You call, you know, Krishna, your Krishna is God. He danced with other men." What am I going to explain in the 2 minutes I have? You know, that I can explain it. But the point is that this is a reflection. Okay? Prabhupada's immortal phrase, the perverted reflection. The highest there is the lowest here. So the highest there is this love and separation, this lawless love, parakiya ras, Krishna dancing with the gopis. It's worshipped by great sannyasis, headed by Lord Chaitanya. Renunciants, par excellence. You know? But the same thing here, illicit sex, dancing, going to the clubs, is the lowest. It's degradation. It leads down to suffering. You know, that's the way it works. Okay, thanks for that. Okay, we're on, what, text 10, right? Tamavacha Rishikesha.
Tamavacha Rishikesha.
Pasan Iva Bharata.
Pasan Iva Bharata.
Sena Yoda Bhayor Madhye.
Sena Yoda Bhayor Madhye.
Vishidantam idam vachaha. O descendant of Bharat, at that time Krishna, smiling in the midst of both the armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. The talk was going on between intimate friends, namely the Rishikesh and the Gurakesh. As friends, both of them were on the same level, but one of them voluntarily became a student of the other. Krishna was smiling because a friend had chosen to become a disciple. As Lord of all, he is always in the superior position as the master of everyone. And yet the Lord agrees to be a friend, a son, or a lover for a devotee who wants him in such a role. But when he was accepted as the master, he at once assumed the role and talked with the disciple like the master, with gravity, as it is required. It appears that the talk between the master and the disciple was openly exchanged in the presence of both armies so that all were benefited. So the talks of Bhagavad Gita are not for any particular person, society, or community, but they are for all, and friends or enemies are equally entitled to hear them. So this word, Gudakesh, that was mentioned on the previous verse, conqueror of sleep. You know, Arjuna was a great warrior. You could go for 24 hours without sleeping, whatever, or more. But he had, in this particular instance, he was overwhelmed by the illusion, you know, for... So the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. So one of these things, one of the points here is that Krishna changes his attitude. He responds according to how you approach him. So Arjuna was approaching him as a friend, which was his natural position, and Krishna was dealing as a friend, but they weren't solving the problem. Only when Arjuna approached Krishna as a spiritual master, and Krishna took that role, was Arjuna's problem solved. So similarly, we have to find someone who is in knowledge and who cares enough to get on our case. You know, someone who will actually chastise. You know, to put it plainly, which is the very first thing that Krishna does here, and really kind of wakes us up. The feel good gurus, you know, you're okay, I'm okay, whatever you want to do, that's not going to help you. You need someone to really, really discipline. There needs to be discipline. You remember we went over the meaning of the word shishya, how the root is shush, which means to be controlled, to agree to be controlled by the words of the guru and the words of the shastra. Shastra itself comes from the same root. And so that's a critical step for anyone. As long as we're still trying to figure it out on our own, you know, and we're not willing to really surrender, then we won't get the full benefit of the spiritual master or the shastra. This is really the key element. That's why the first step, according to Rupa Goswami, Ado Guvashriya. Ado, in the beginning, this is number one. He has a whole list of 64 principles. And the first one of the first 10, which are in a kind of a special category, is to take shelter of a guru. And then inquire, and then follow instructions. You know, it's very basic. So Prabhupada, you know, this is what he did. He made himself available. He gave his words by the ton, you know, as much as you wanted. And if we follow, then we will get the benefit. Okay, ready for the first instruction of Krishna. Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Ashochanan Vashochastvam, Prangavarangstha Bhashase, Katasuna Katasungstha, Nanashochanti Panditaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Purport. The Lord at once took the position of the teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. The Lord said, you are talking like a learned man, but you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what is body and what is soul, does not lament for any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition. As explained in later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology, but he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and the supreme is even more important than religious formularies. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and is destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. One who knows this is actually learned, and for him there is no cause for lamentation, regardless of the condition of the material body. So just for a moment, just consider our world today. So much of the effort that people are engaged in is in of course, you know, catering to the body and its needs, and also lamenting. Suppose the whole thing is key here on Arjuna's not wanting to kill his relatives, right? That was his illusion. But suppose you don't have any idea of this transcendental knowledge, and your relatives, your friends are killed. It's happening all the time. So you lament for a while, and then you will establish in your heart this grief and anger, right? And you know, if your clan has been, you know, decimated or conquered or something, you'll be always thinking, you know, how we can get back at those oppressors, you know? And even like 200 years later, now's our chance, you know? It'll go on and on, you see? So this lamentation, which is really the mode of ignorance, is a great disease. It just constricts the heart. You're identifying with your body and others like you in the place where you're born. This is the equality of the cows and the asses, according to Krishna. One who worships the land of one's birth, yasyatma buddhi kunapeti datuke, means I'm thinking, I have the buddhi, that I am this bag full of, you know, three datus, mucus, bile, and air. Does anyone really want to think that's who I am? You know? When you embrace someone, you know, in ordinary, do they really think, oh, this is really, this particular bag of blood and mucus in the air is really nicely shaped. Very attractive. That one over there is too fat, isn't it? No one thinks like that, right? But that's the reality. So Krishna is saying here, he's speaking in the I forget which chapter, 88th chapter in the 10th canon. You know, and someone who worships the place of birth is also like that, is Gokara. Now, Gokara probably says the cow or an ass, but it can also mean the ass who carries the straw or the hay for the cow. In other words, very lowly and dumb position, you know. But where do you, what's going on in this world? Everyone, you know, the Chinese, hey, China. I remember when, you know, Americans, the same thing. But I remember there was an accident. This was back in the mid-90s when we were bombing Serbia or something like that. And NATO was doing it. And they accidentally bombed the Chinese embassy. Oh, maha offense, oh, riots all over China. Oh, my God, you know. We identify, you know, we're Chinese. We're not Japanese. I mean, like, can we tell? Be honest. Can you tell the difference? Well, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, they can't tell the difference between, I can't either, Canadians and Americans, South America, Australians. And, so, but it's so superficial, you know. But that's Boma Ijidi. That's worshiping the land or the body, you know. So that is, you know, what Krishna is chastising about. You're lamenting for what is not worthy of grief. You're, you know, cheering for what is not worthy of cheering. You're pampering what is not worthy of pampering, namely this body, you know, and its relations. So much, I mean, the Bhagavatam comes back again and again to this, you know, simple point. And Krishna is now bringing him up, you know, short in this, is that you've made this argument, but it's going nowhere. It's not going to help you. Okay, let's do another one. Now, this next one is actually a big verse, purport, but we'll get through it. Maybe we'll read it again tomorrow. Natvevaham jatu nasam.
Natvevaham jatu nasam.
Natvam ne me janadipaha.
Natvam ne me janadipaha.
Natchaiva nabhavishyama.
Natchaiva nabhavishyama.
Sarve vayamatakparam.
Sarve vayamatakparam.
Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Purport. In the Vedas, in the Katha Upanishad, as well as in the Shvetashvata Upanishad, it is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the maintainer of innumerable living entities in terms of their different situations according to individual work and reaction of work. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is also, by his plenary portions, alive in the heart of every living entity. Only saintly persons who can see within and without the same Supreme Lord can actually attain to perfect and eternal peace. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam hyobadadati kaman tamatmastam yena pasyanti diras tesham shanti shashvati netaresham. Katupanishad 2.2.13. The same Vedic truth given to Arjuna is given to all persons in the world who pose themselves as very learned, but factually have but a poor fund of knowledge. So we're going to stop for a second and translate this verse. This is a famous verse, probably would quote often just the first two lines. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetanam. So nitya is one, and nityanam is plural. Chetana is one, and chetananam is plural. So the idea is that of all the eternal conscious beings, there is one eternal conscious being who is what? Eko bahunam yovadadati kaman. Who is providing the kaman, or the necessities, the desires, fulfilling desires of all others. So this is Krishna, this is God. Tamatmastam ye anupashyanti dhiras. Only the dhiras can see that soul situated within the heart. And tesham shanti shasvati, only they attain peace, eternal peace, not others. Not others, you see. Okay, so that's what that verse means. The Lord says clearly that He Himself, Arjuna, and all the kings who are assembled on the battlefield are eternally individual beings, and that the Lord is eternally the maintainer of the individual living entities, both in their conditioned and in their liberated situations. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the supreme individual person, and Arjuna, the Lord's eternal associate, and all the kings assembled there are individual eternal persons. It is not that they did not exist as individuals in the past, and it is not that they will not remain eternal persons. Their individuality existed in the past, and their individuality will continue in the future without interruption. Therefore, there is no cause for lamentation for anyone. So this is obviously a challenge to the Mayavadis, who say that we ultimately all merge, and therefore Prabhupada uses most of the rest of the purport to attack the Mayavadis on the basis of this verse. The Mayavadi theory that after liberation, the individual soul, separated by the covering of Maya or illusion, will merge into the impersonal Brahman and lose its individual existence, is not supported herein by Lord Krishna, the supreme authority. Nor is the theory that we only think of individuality in the conditioned state supported herein. Krishna clearly says herein that in the future also the individuality of the Lord and others, as it is confirmed in the Upanishads, this verse you just quoted, will continue eternally. This statement of Krishna's is authoritative because Krishna cannot be subject to illusion. If individuality were not a fact, then Krishna would not have stressed it so much, even for the future. The Mayavadi may argue that the individuality spoken of by Krishna is not spiritual, but material. Even accepting the argument that the individuality is material, then how can one distinguish Krishna's individuality? Krishna affirms his individuality in the past and confirms his individuality in the future also. He has confirmed his individuality in many ways, and impersonal Brahman has been declared to be subordinate to him. Verse, Brahmano hi prachashtam. This is 14:27. Very important verse, that the Brahman is subordinate to him. Krishna has maintained spiritual individuality all along. If he is accepted as his ordinary conditioned soul in individual consciousness, then his Bhagavad Gita has no value as authoritative scripture. A common man with all the four defects of human frailty is unable to teach that which is worth hearing. So those defects are, I like to think of them, imperfect senses, making mistakes, becoming illusioned, and cheating. All right, let's finish this purpose. The Gita is above such literature. No mundane book compares with the Bhagavad Gita. When one accepts Krishna as an ordinary man, the Gita loses all importance. The Mayavadi argues that the plurality mentioned in this verse is conventional and that it refers to the body. But previous to this verse, such bodily conception is already condemned. After condemning the bodily conception of the living entities, how is it possible for Krishna to place a conventional proposition on the body again? Therefore, individuality is maintained on spiritual grounds and is thus confirmed by great acharyas like Sri Ramanuja and others. It is clearly mentioned in many places in the Gita that the spiritual individuality is understood by those who are devotees of the Lord. Those who are envious of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead have no bona fide access to this great literature. The non-devotee's approach to the teachings of the Gita is something like that of a bee licking on a bottle of honey. One cannot have a taste of honey unless one opens the bottle. Similarly, the mysticism of the Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees, and no one else can taste it. As it is stated in the fourth chapter of the book, nor can the Gita be touched by persons who envy the very existence of the Lord. Therefore, the Mayavadi explanation of the Gita is a most misleading presentation of the whole truth. Lord Chaitanya has forbidden us to read commentations made by the Mayavadis and warns that one who takes to such an understanding of the Mayavadi philosophy loses all power to understand the real mystery of the Gita. If individuality refers to the empirical universe, then there is no need of teaching by the Lord. The plurality of the individual soul and the Lord is an eternal fact, and it is confirmed by the Vedas, as above mentioned. So we've run out of time, but we'll explore tomorrow.